And we're, you know, always looking at improving the various ways of increasing awareness, connecting people to resources, and increasing their food literacy while understanding their constraints about how we can have them basically improve their diet and improve their fruit and vegetable consumption.
Green Hero. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Green Hero Podcast. This is Ricard, founder of Green Hero, your go-to source for making plant-based eating easy and enjoyable. Each week, we'll be digging into the inspiring journeys of people who live a plant-based lifestyle to tease out the most effective and fun ways to add more plants to your life.
Green Hero.
Today's guest is plant-forward nutritionist Dr. Sabeda Kumar of San Francisco State University. Sabeda has spent years of research investigating the behavioral aspects of nutrition and cultural and socioeconomic factors of health in various communities. She's currently leading several projects towards understanding food insecurity and designing innovative strategies to improve nutrition security and food literacy. So here's this week's episode with Sabeda Kumar. Sabeda, welcome, and thank you for joining us on our podcast. I'm so excited to have you on our show. How's it going, and where are you calling in from today?
Thank you, Ricard, for having me on your show. I'm very excited to be here. I am calling from the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's been hot for the last few days here.
All right. So we had a really interesting chat over lunch at the Reducitarian Summit a few months ago, and I'm happy that we get to continue that conversation today. But before we dig into your journey, I wanted to ask you about the quote you have in your email signature, Maslow before Bloom. What does that mean, and why is that so important to you?
Yes. So I'm glad you asked, because that is one of the areas I conduct research on, which is basic needs and specifically food insecurity, because that has been my area of interest for the last few years. And Maslow is actually a theory that is, Maslow is a person that came up with a theory in psychology, and that's called a theory of motivation, which basically says that people's basic needs need to be met before higher needs are to be achieved, right? So Bloom is another person who came up with concepts related to learning. And given that I conduct food insecurity research in college students, and if their basic needs are not going to be met, that is going to have an impact on their grades, on their health, on their overall performance, retention, etc. So that's the quote Maslow before Bloom is usually referring to the fact that we need to take care of the basic needs of our students first before we can expect them to perform well in their academics. So that's where the quote comes from.
All right. Okay. I'm happy to hear that you care about your students' well-being first before you bombard them with theory.
Of course.
Yeah. So your work is in nutrition. So maybe we can start there also, like just to talk about like, what are people getting wrong about nutrition?
Specifically from a plant-based perspective or just overall in general?
Oh, anything that you think would be interesting to talk about.
That's a good question. I think in nutrition science in general is a field that is evolving. And, you know, oftentimes consumers or people who are looking at the various studies that are coming out, sometimes they feel like it's the messages are not consistent. And that's because the science is evolving and new studies come out. And if we think about nutrition science in general, it's a relatively newer science that, you know, flourished in the last 100 or so years. And that's why, you know, some of the messages that come out, sometimes they get sensationalized in the news. And, you know, people may focus on one nutrient over the other versus looking at the whole dietary patterns per se. So I think that's one of the things that is fascinating to me, first of all. And that's where, you know, there's a need for registered dietitians and people with credible nutrition backgrounds to educate the public on, because there's all kinds of messaging that is out there with social media, etc. So I think that's where there's a lot of work that's happening. Now, specifically with regards to plant-based, I think one of the things that, you know, people should be mindful of is a couple things, and specifically that's, you know, because I work with this population and that these are things that are always on my mind with regards to food insecurity. With food insecurity, what does food insecurity mean? Food, and people use those terms interchangeably, but they both, food insecurity versus food security, mean different things. So food security means access to adequate, nutritious food for active, healthy life at all times, versus food insecurity is uncertain or limited access to healthy, nutritious food, you know, to maintain that lifestyle. We want food security. We don't want food insecurity, right? So that's kind of where you make that assessment. And, you know, 1 in 10 people globally suffer from food insecurity and hunger. In the US, we are, you know, about 11% or so of the population suffer from food insecurity. And there's various facets of food security that, you know, we can work on. And, you know, there's food waste, right? How can we reduce food waste? How can we incorporate more of the products that we use so they don't go to landfills, for example, and they are able to be used for people's nutrition per se, right? So those are some of the areas that I am interested in, and specifically in this world of nutrition. And of course, new studies are coming out on gut microbiome, etc. But for me, I think food security, food waste, and food literacy are kind of the concepts that I am the most interested in at the moment.
Yeah. And I know that in like kind of the food strategy post World War II was to increase the quantity of food because there was food insecurity and people didn't have access to food, but there was not really much emphasis on food quality. So how has that been? Is that something in your work that you've seen that we are producing a lot of food to create more security, but we're not producing like so much quality in the food that we're producing? How is that something you have seen in your work?
Yeah, I think the perspective is shifting, right? So recently there is a lot of focus on what we call nutrition security, that yes, having access to food is important, but what about the quality of food? So this nutrition security concept looks at the quality of food too. And that's where I think it's very important. That's where the concept of food literacy then becomes important, right? And what is food literacy? That is a set of skills and knowledge to buy, plan, prepare, and eat food. And understanding that behavior change is not easy. And, you know, people need to take baby steps towards something that they can sustain over time. And by something, I mean, you know, something that is going to be conducive to their health and will help prevent diseases, etc. So food literacy is a concept that, you know, we need to incorporate so we can educate people on how they can use their resources better, right? How they can reduce the food waste that they might be creating. And maybe we can educate them on, you know, how to stay within the budget, right? Because that's very important. So things have changed. The perspective have changed that, yes, you know, I mean, at the time, maybe as you were mentioning, the quantity was important and quantity still is important, but the quality also needs to be focused on. And people are focusing on that now. It is something that we are mindful of, and people, registered dietitians and nutrition academics like myself who are working on this, we are very mindful of the quality of food versus just providing the quantity that is there.
Mm. And when you talk about food literacy as well, what are the things that people do know, you know, like people know how to eat, they know to go how to, where to get food, but what is it like, what you feel is like the delta from what people know and to what they don't, or what they should know, maybe better to say it that way.
Right. No, that's a good point. Thankfully, you know, because of so much information that is out there, people understand the connection Now people understand the connection between nutrition and health. People understand the connection between nutrition and prevention of diseases. People are beginning to understand, as more, you know, studies and research come out, about the impact of nutrition, or basically nutrients, on gut microbiome, right? So people are beginning to have that understanding. The tough part is behavior, right? How do you guide people so they can sustain the behavior, right? And people sometimes think that they have to do this all or none approach, but you don't, right? Just make baby steps, you know, kind of get, first of all, you know, education and awareness is important. And that's where registered dietitians come into the picture and other nutrition professionals come into the picture. And then once you have that guidance and that awareness, that education, what are some changes that you can make that you will sustain over time, right? And then the other thing is that, you know, after having that understanding, how is your wallet looking like? Right? That's, and we know we have all been seeing inflation, right? So the cost is increasing for pretty much everything, right? And that is going to have an impact on our buying power. So how does that look like? And then cultural foods, again, everybody is coming from different cultures. People have different preferences, right? So as a registered dietitian, when, you know, people look at these various elements, then you can give catered advice to your clients, right? And then as a researcher, we're always looking at ways, how can we improve people's attitudes towards, you know, X, Y, Z, whether that's a nutrient, that's a food item, whether that's an eating pattern, right? And how can we create interventions to guide people towards a change, a behavior change that is going to be conducive to their health. I think that's where, you know, a lot of the work needs to be done. People do have a basic understanding now, you know, because of all the knowledge and awareness that is out there. But how do you, the implementation is the key. How do you implement that? And how do you maintain in your lifestyle?
And I mean, even knowledge about nutrients as well. I think that, do you feel that like the general message that's out there is a very big focus on macronutrients? People are talking always about proteins. Am I getting enough protein? This and that. Like, what do you think like the level of understanding of nutrition is? And especially from a plant-based perspective, because people think that, well, animal products is really what has proteins. So if I remove that, will I then have enough nutrients to continue living, basically?
Right. I think, you know, that's also shifting a little bit from what we have observed. There was a lot of focus on what we call macronutrients, your carbohydrates, lipids, fats, proteins, right? And now people are aware that the micronutrients are also very important for, and by micronutrients, I mean, you know, minerals, vitamins, polyphenols, etc., are very important for your metabolism, for overall well-being. And specifically, you know, with regards to plant-based diets, it does require a little bit of planning, right? It is possible. It does require a little bit more planning with regards to how you're going to meet your vitamin B12 needs, as an example, right? And with protein, you know, that's something that always amazes me. And that's where, again, food literacy is so key, that how can we educate people on what are some of the best sources of plant-based proteins that they can utilize, right? And one of the things that we have seen is lentils, right? Lentils are such a great source of so many nutrients and also of protein. And it's just something that is not very common yet. People are experimenting, utilizing, etc. Versus, you know, some of the other sources of protein are more common, such as tofu, right? So I think we need to increase education and awareness about some of these other elements. And, you know, the area that I'm coming from, you know, we are working with people of all backgrounds, of all sorts of values, right? So we have to understand their needs and then cater to what is going to work for them with regards to their financial situation, with regards to where they live, and do they have access to food, et cetera. And then we have to cater our advice within those contexts to the people. So it is possible. It just requires a little bit more planning. And that's where, you know, registered dietitians can help make that change if someone is planning to kind of get in this area of more plant-forward diet is what I would say. And, you know, we're talking about whole foods, plant products, right? Such as legumes, whole grains, nuts, etc. Those are kind of the plant-forward diet, which is, you know, majority plants that people are going to be consuming. That's something that is a big consensus that exists in the nutrition world that is conducive to health. And it is something that we are always promoting, right? And then if you talk about statistics, specifically with regards to fruit and vegetable intake, right? They don't look that great in the United States, right? So only 10 to 12% of the people in the United States are meeting their fruit and vegetable intake. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done with how we can, you know, guide people towards improving their fruit and vegetable intake. And the people, some particular groups are more impacted than others. So people who are coming from low-income backgrounds with limited resources and younger adults, right? People less than 50 years of age, that has been shown in research, they're less likely to meet their fruit and vegetable consumption. So if someone is kind of trying to get in this area of plant-forward diets, it, you know, just would require a little bit more planning, and there is a lot of work that needs to be done in this area.
Yeah. And when you're saying that a little bit more planning, I assume that is to cook at home, but, you know, a lot of people eat out all the time as well. And maybe something that's interesting, you know, people go to the grocery store and they were like, well, does this have the macronutrients? Does it have the micronutrients? But then people go out and all of those thoughts are just like thrown out the window. So how can we make sure like that when we eat out, it's good food that we eat? And also like, is there a number of amount of times that we should eat out per week and we should cook from home? How do you see that?
Right. I think there is a place for all of that in healthy dietary pattern, right? You can eat out once in a while. And with cooking, that's where, again, the food literacy really plays a role, that do people know how to, first of all, buy what they're supposed to buy from the grocery stores? How can they make sure that it stays and it's they can utilize it longer, right, without breaking their budget? And also, how can they store it? Because oftentimes, again, food waste is a big problem in the country right now. About a third of the food that is being produced is wasted. And that is something that is not a very good statistic right now. Americans, on average, waste about a pound of food per person per day. And when we look at, you know, climate change and changes on the climate, one of the statistics that has come out, and it's by a nonprofit climate change organization called Project Drawdown, they have come up with this number that reducing food waste is the number one solution to the climate crisis. And it's above electric cars, solar power, energy, and, you know, some of these other initiatives that are out there. Now, with food waste, again, the portions are big. If we're talking about buying or eating out at restaurants, sometimes the portions can be big, and it's okay to either share with someone that you are eating the food with if you are eating with someone outside. If it's left and you don't want it to go to waste, and you can use it for yourself, you can, you know, have a to-go box and have that food, eat it at a different time, or you can even donate it to someone who may need that food, right? So there's various ways of how you can tackle that. And it's okay to eat out, you know, once in a while, and it can be part of a healthy lifestyle. And of course, with cooking, again, we encourage a variety of food products and variety, you know, colors, right? As we say, that you incorporate and experiment with whole grains, nuts, legumes, things of that nature. And if it's something that you have not tried, you know, we encourage that you see if that's going to work for you or not, right? So in that sense, you know, it is possible that people can work on their cooking skills, right? And when, with regards to food labels, one of the things you mentioned is sometimes that can be tricky for people that, you know, when they, how do they make sense of that, right? How do they look at food labels and what does that mean for that individual person? And again, keep in mind that we are all different individuals, right? With our different needs. And what may work for one person may not work for the other. So I think it's important that you look at all these various elements. And again, given the constraints that some people may feel, they might be traveling all the time. They may not have access to a kitchen, right? Or the other thing from with regards to the food insecurity work that I do, I work with limited resources audiences, right? Some of them may not even know if they will have food on their plate for dinner, right? Or the next day. So I need to be very mindful of sometimes. And again, in general, like anybody who works in this field needs to be mindful of sometimes the privilege that we have, right? That we are able to go and buy and any food that we want at all times, right? That's a privilege that we have. And that privilege is not available to all segments of the society. So I think we need to be a little mindful of the fact that not everybody might be able to eat out good quality food. Again, you know, there is a lot of cheaper outside food that is available that people can afford, right? So it's just, it's going to be very individual, the kind of guidance that we would be giving to people with regards to eating outside and cooking at home. And we have to look at what is the baseline? What are their cooking skills like? Can they understand, you know, the directions? What about language needs, etc.? So once we have a look at all of that, we are able to guide people in a more customized, individualized manner.
All right. So when you are engaging with these people that have all these different needs that you're saying some people might not have the economical means to purchase food, but I assume also they might not even have the tools in their home to cook the food that, I mean, maybe some people just have a microwave at home and there's nothing else. How are you able to create plans for everyone? Do you think that you're able to secure good food for anyone? Is it just like figuring out for people how to do this? Or is there like, what are the kind of the tactics that you guys use?
Yeah, so there are a few different things that can be done. And, you know, I've mentioned about food literacy. That's one thing, which is, you know, skills, knowledge, etc., to buy, plan, prepare, and eat food. But the other thing is raising awareness. There are a lot of resources out there that people can use, people with limited resources can use to make their situation a little bit better. For example, you know, going to local food banks or local food pantries to get some of this produce or get some of those food items that they can then eventually bring at home and prepare. Right. And then sometimes people may not know that these resources exist. Right. So how can we raise awareness about that, whether through social media or through campaigns, etc., to connect people to the resources? Because there's a lot that is existing out there, right, with regards to items that people can buy, with regards to just receive, right? Sometimes you can just pick up a box of food that is being given out at the food bank or the food pantry. Now, it does get interesting. For example, one of the examples that we've seen that has happened on our campus is, you know, we do have a food pantry on campus where students can go and grab a box. Sometimes there are some seasonal items that are there that people don't know what to do about them. For example, spaghetti squash, right? It's something that people may not be aware of how to cook, how to use. So how can we educate them? And there are various ways to target this sort of situation. Should we add a recipe card, right? Once, if we know ahead of time that this is a produce that is going to be there and it's a relatively unique produce that people may not know what to do with, right? Maybe we can include a recipe card that how can you make this? And understanding that people's and providing different ways of preparing it. As you were saying, right, they may not have access to a refrigerator to store, right? They may not have access to a stove or some an oven of that nature. Maybe the only thing they have is a microwave, right? So how can we educate people, again, in different ways, right? Is if we notice, and sometimes we notice for at least for some of the populations that I worked with is they're very active on social media. Do we want to create some sort of a little video or an Instagram reel, for example, to show them how to quickly prepare something of that nature? And just understanding that not everybody is going to have the tools to prepare. And what can we do, right? What can we do to improve that situation? So we're testing out interventions of sorts in the area that I study. And we're, you know, always looking at improving the various ways of increasing awareness, connecting people to resources, and increasing their food literacy while understanding their constraints about how we can have them basically improve their diet and improve their fruit and vegetable consumption.
All right. That sounds super, super awesome. That's good work. So let me ask you this. Who impresses you at the moment in the space that you're in? Is there any organization or brand that's doing some really cool stuff that you think people should check out?
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting work that is happening right now, which is exciting. So I would mention a couple of people that are doing some amazing work in this area. From a scientific perspective, you know, I'm a researcher myself. So somebody that is doing amazing work in this area is Christopher Gardner, who's a professor at Stanford Prevention Research Center. And he conducts a lot of randomized controlled trials on various dietary components, and very amazing work comes out from his lab. So check out his work. And just from other perspective, you know, there are a couple of other people that have been doing some fascinating work from my perspective, right? Because I'm very much interested in reducing food waste. One of the people is Max Lamana, who's a low food waste chef and author. And if you follow him on Instagram, you will see lots of recipes that he's using, and he is self-claiming to be basically zero food waste for the last few years, right? So that's one of the people that I kind of just love looking at some of the recipes that he's bringing out with using food scraps, right? And leftovers, etc. And then another person is Carly Bodrug at Plant You. It's also, again, on Instagram, you can find a similar concept of scrappy, low-waste plant-based cooking, right? And you can find some really interesting ideas. For example, banana peel banana bread, right? So how do you use the whole banana with the peel, right? And then create a recipe from that. So it's very interesting. And, you know, just check out those few people. And I think you might be fascinated to see some of the work that they're doing.
All right. And where can people find you online and your institution as well?
Yes. So I am the most active on LinkedIn. So if you search my name, Zubaida Kumar, Zubaida, and last name is Kamar, you can reach out there. I am on Twitter and Instagram too. On Twitter, I am at Zubaida_Kumar, and my Instagram is at drzkumar as well. So, but I'm the most active on LinkedIn. So if people want to reach out, they can. My institution is San Francisco State University. That is, you know, if you search, you will be able to find that. And just, you know, in general, I do want to give out this message to people to, if they are able to support initiatives around food security and reducing food waste, if people can volunteer at their local food banks or local food pantries, that is going to help the cause, right? And if you are an organization that is working on new plant-based products and want to conduct taste tests in San Francisco, feel free to reach out. We have a receptive audience of future registered dietitians and nutrition professionals, and they're always excited about trying out new products and give feedback. So if you are in this space, feel free to reach out. We'll be happy to assist you. And if you want to give a talk, you know, it's something that on your product, we would be happy to accommodate you. And lastly, you know, if you are an organization or individual that is working on food waste or educating on plant-forward eating or food insecurity in general and would like to collaborate, my door is always open and feel free to reach out. I would love to have a conversation with you and maybe we can collaborate on some initiatives.
All right. Sabeeta, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Ricard, for having me. It's been fun.
That was our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Green Hero Podcast was produced by Andrew Rojek, and I'm your host, Ricard Bjerkdal. I'll see you next week for another conversation from our colorful plant-based world. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or share this episode with a friend. If you haven't already, you can also find Green Hero in the App Store. Download our app and start enjoying a plant-based lifestyle today. You can also find us on the web at the URL greenhero.life and on Twitter and Instagram, where we operate under the handle Green Hero Life. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.